This is Stella Peroni with Linda Crane. That's C-R-A-I-N, correct?
Yes, Linda, L-Y-N-D-A, maiden name Benson, B-E-N-S-O-N.
On June 22nd at her home at 120 Alta Vista.
That's right.
Okay, Linda, when were you born?
1947, July 14th,
1947. To who?
To Helen G. Benson and Ross J. Benson.
And when did their families come to Mill Valley?
In 1923, I believe, my mother came. Her grandmother lived in Mill Valley. And her parents from Iowa had bought a farm in Canada that they were farming. And her older sister would be ready to turn six, and they had to come back to America so she wouldn't be a Canadian citizen. My mother was born in Canada, but she came in time at that time, since her parents were American, she became an American citizen. So they had to come down, leave my grandfather in Canada to mind the farm and stay with my grandmother.
And what was your grandmother's name?
Her name was Ritchie, was her last name. I think it was R-I-T-C-H-E-Y. McMillan was her maiden name. And I don't know where she came from, but I know she lived in Mill Valley.
Her first name?
I don't know her first name.
That was your grandmother.
She lived on the corner of Mountain View and Dell in a big, like, Victorian. There's a house there, still there. And she lived there. And they came here, and then my grandfather followed and worked for PG&E here in town. And they bought a house on Sunnyside. And they lived there until 1947. When I was born, they moved to Sonoma. They bought a winery.
Okay, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I'm confused. Who lived at Mountain View and Dell? Can we?
That was my great-grandmother.
Oh, your great-grandmother lived at Mountain View and Dell. Mm-hmm. And her last name was Ritchie.
Yes. I don't know the address.
Okay. Do you know the house if you saw it?
I do know the house.
Okay,
what is it? It has, you know, the rounded windows and the outside is kind of like Victorian looking, right on the corner.
Okay,
I think it's Dell there. Dell Lane's across the street. It's right there on the corner.
Okay, so that was your great-grandmother?
Mm-hmm.
And then she had your grandmother here?
No, she was grown. My grandmother was born in Maryland and moved here when she was married and had the two girls that they wanted to relocate again.
Okay, what was her name?
Her name was Ann Groll, G-R-O-L-L.
Okay, when they moved here, they moved to what house?
The girls, the two girls and the mom stayed with my great-grandmother on Dell and Mountain View. Then my grandfather came down once the farm, he had someone to watch the farm. We still have it in the family. It's a wheat farm and it's 325 acres in Alberta, Canada, where he had just gone to do farming there. You know, we didn't have any Canadian ties. But so he came down here and they bought the house on Sunnyside. I think, was it 87 or 57?
I think it was 87.
87. And she grew up there with her sister and her mother and father. And then Grandpa got a job at PG&E. And Grandma didn't she opened the White Mill later on downtown, which is right next to the PG&E office. And in the picture in that book of the old Mill Valley stuff, I should go get it, it shows his old car parked out in front. The PG&E office is there and the White Mill, and there's his old car.
Okay, so your grandmother, Annie Grohl, opened up the White Mill adjacent to the Quinn's Bar.
That's right.
Roughly what year?
I'm not sure, but I have an old menu from 1935 not a menu, but a cookbook. It was a Borden's Creamery franchise.
Oh, it was a franchise.
Well, sort of. They had to buy Borden's. I'll say they were their supplier, and it's a Borden's book, and it's like, it's recipe book, how much it will cost. It breaks it down and cooking for how many, you know, 80 people or whatever. You'd probably like to see that
Was Annie the cook?
She cooked. She was a wonderful cook. And they hired someone to help cook. It was just the girls. They were grown by then. I think when they had it, my mother was maybe a teenager and her older sister was a few years older. It was them, my grandmother, and a girlfriend. People used to come in and hang out there, and it was just
you know, burgers, ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream, burgers, really good pot roast, good food, good comfort food. She was a wonderful cook, best apple pie ever, and yeah. So they didn't have it that long because my mother used to always at the white mill this, at the white mill that, when we had the white mill. And I said, how long did you have that white mill? It sounds like, you know, that was her whole life. It did only a few years.
Oh, really?
Well, because they moved away, too. You know, then they moved to Sonoma. So, no, they didn't have it. I don't know.
So when your mother was, like, a little
when she was pregnant with me, I guess. I don't know. I didn't do that. My grandfather had a heart attack and had to retire from PG&E. And so he went up there, and they bought this 30-acre winery.
Okay, and your grandfather, he worked for PG&E in Mill Valley. Mm-hmm. And what did he do for PG&E?
I think he got the gas started and installed it because this goes later on, probably you'd want to know, but he, Sausalito had a lot of residents down there. It was growing, and he went down there and he got smallpox. And they had an epidemic, and that's when they lived on Sunnyside, and my grandparents and my mother got it badly, and my grandfather had the smallpox, and they were quarantined, and people brought them food and everything, left it out, my mother said. And then when it was all over and they survived, they burnt the sheets out in the street on Sunnyside.
Wow.
Yeah, but he picked it up. He figured there are a lot of immigrants coming in, a lot of Portuguese.
Roughly, what year was this, roughly?
Roughly, I have no idea, but it was sometime between, it was probably in the 30s, early 30s, late 20s.
Did people die of smallpox?
Yes, oh yes, it was terrible. There was no cure, and yeah.
So they burnt the sheets.
They burnt the sheets, and I guess several people in the town did have smallpox, but he was pretty sure he got it going in, starting, you know, lighting the pilot lighter, going into somebody's home, because there were so many people coming here from other countries and everything, and locating.
Uh-huh.
You know,
so he worked for PG&E. His office was right down there.
Right down there, yeah.
On the other side of Quinn's.
I'm pretty sure that's where it was. Yeah, yeah. Because later, when I grew up, it was farther up on Throckmorton. But I don't, you know, I always imagined it was along there somewhere. But I don't think so. Because one of the photos, it said PG&E on it. I'll have to look for that.
Okay, so, and then your grandparents moved away up to Sonoma.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought
A farm. But in the meantime, the war went on, and my father was at Pearl Harbor. He was bombed at Pearl Harbor on the West Virginia.
And where was your father from?
He was from Iowa, and he joined the Navy and came back to San Francisco. He was on leave, and my mother met him on a blind date, and they got married like 10 days later. And then he went back to the Navy, and then he worked for the post office here when he got out of the Navy. And he worked for the Mill Valley Post Office.
And his name again was?
He was Ross Benson. And then as we were growing up, he worked for the post office. And then he and a neighbor.
Which
Mill Valley.
The one up at Sunnyside.
Yeah, down on Sunnyside. Yeah, we lived on Mountain View at the time, a different Mountain View house. We lived at 75 Mountain View. It's a duplex. And when they were first married. And let's see, where was I going with this?
Okay, he worked at the post office.
He worked at the post office, and he was also in the reserves when I was little. I remember that. And my aunt owned the home that they were in. They rented it from her, and she raised the rent to $25 a month, and they moved because they thought that was outrageous. So they moved up to Sunnyside, another house on Sunnyside, 107 Sunnyside. And we lived there until I was about 7. So that was from maybe when I was age 3 to 7.
You rented that, obviously.
We rented that. And that's when my father opened a gas station at the corner of Throckmorton and Buena Vista. It was called Intiman Benson Mobile Gas Station.
What was it called?
Intiman's. I-N-T-E-M-A-N.
Why Intiman's?
That was his friend. Our neighbor on Sunnyside, Dick Intiman.
Okay.
And they opened a gas station, and they ran it for a few years, and then they sold it to the Eberharts here.
Okay,
town.
And that was right where the Barber Sharp is now.
Yeah,
okay.
Just right where it comes to that
the island.
Stefano's. Yeah, that was the gas station right there. And then from there, he got a job with the city of Mill Valley as their mechanic, doing all their city cars. And it was down at the corporation yard where he worked. They had the garage down there. And he became interested in the water quality and all, went back to school and became the director of public works here in town.
Roughly what year or how old were you?
It was before we moved here that he worked for the city. So in the 50s.
Okay.
And then he retired in the 70s. And he got cancer right after that and died at the age of 56. And they named the street after him, Benson Circle.
And why'd they name the street after him?
Because he was well-known in the town and a nice guy. It was a tribute to him because he had been their director of public works for years.
I didn't know if he did anything special.
No, he was just special. He was a real nice guy. So, yeah, they did that. It was when Scott Valley was made, and they gave us a sign for our own yard, so that was good. So that's the story of them. And my mother continued on here. She worked for the state assemblyman for Marin and Sonoma County.
Who was that?
That was Richard H. McAllister, and she worked for him for years. Ladies didn't, not too many ladies worked. They stayed home, and she stayed home quite a while with me. But she was a good secretary, and she had been a secretary in the city as a young girl before they opened the White Mill, or even after, maybe, I don't know. But she worked for him and then got interested in real estate and worked for Kegwin and Hamilton Realtors here until probably through the 60s. And then she retired when my dad retired. And
so she was like office manager or whatever for...
No, she was a real estate agent.
Oh, she was a real estate
agent. Yeah, she went to real estate school. And she knew every house in Mill Valley because she'd grown up here. And at that time, they knew everyone in town. And she knew the history of every home because the only new homes at that time, they built the Goheen Tract. And they built Enchanted Knolls and, you know, over at Sutton Manor, they called it, where Dorset Lane is and over by CVS. But she knew the history of, that's what I wish she would have talked to, because she knew, you know, what went on.
And I'm sorry, she died when?
2008 she died, 2007. And then we moved back down here. We had to go, that's a different story with me, but we got married. I got married in 1972 and had to move to Petaluma because we couldn't afford to buy in Marin. And we lived in the upstairs of that same duplex. It just turned out that she inherited that same first duplex that she lived in when she was first married. We lived there also for a couple of years. And then I was going to have a baby, and we couldn't afford Marin, so we moved to Petaluma. And we stayed there for 34 years, I think. And then came back down here after she died. We moved back into this house.
So when did they move into this house? Tell me about the history of this.
Yeah, this house, they moved in around 1960. And this house was built by Roque Moraes, however you say it, for his daughter when she got married.
For Marie, which daughter?
I think Dorothy, was it Dorothy Williams was the daughter?
Okay.
I think it's Dorothy Williams, and I'm pretty sure she said that was her dad, but
okay,
I'm not sure. But anyway, she lived here, and then she sold the house to the coffee heiress, the Folger coffee heiress, Ann Folger, and she lived here before we bought it. My parents bought it from Ann Folger. And when the Manson murders happened, and they killed Abigail Folger, the coffee heiress, I was scared to death. My parents were gone, and I was here, a teenager, you know, young woman. I was working in the city, actually, at that time, because I didn't know if they were targeting the Folgers and thought maybe she lived here. You know, nobody knew why at first when the Sharon Tate murders happened, why they happened.
So the seller of this house, Ann Folger, was the sister of...
Because I looked it up. I tried to look it up, but her mother, that was not her mother. Ann was not Abigail's mother, but yet I couldn't find, you know, much information about that. So, yeah. I think it must have been her aunt or something. She was the heiress at the time. They always called her Ann Folger, the coffee heiress, and they called Abigail, coffee heiress. Walter's coffee heiress. So I don't know. So that's all I know about this house. But the house, I think it was built in 1945. I've seen a lot of changes on the hill. It was all open hill, open space, and we owned to the middle of the street, and Manuel Gomez owned to the other middle of the street. And when my father wanted to build the carport, they made a, I better not talk about the arrangements, but I do have the paperwork for it. Everything was on the up and up because my dad worked for the city and he had to make sure everything was done by the book. But they, one of the reasons they had to do some kind of a variance to let that, they've been using it as a street forever, but really it was our property and Gomez's property that went to the middle of the street. That was kind of interesting. But during like the 70s, when we had that drought, my parents put a well in here, where, and there's an underground stream that goes underneath because they hardly had to go down at all, and they got water and they used that to keep our garden going. That's always been important, to have the garden. But I didn't fire it back up. I thought if we have another drought year, I might fire it back up, but it's pretty old now. So let's see. When I was little, I wanted to tell you about when I was little, there was this man called the Snake Man in Mill Valley, and he walked around town. Have you heard any other stories about the Snake Man? Okay. He was a tall, skinny, scary man when you're little, of course, and he was kind of hunched over, and he carried a burlap sack, and everybody said he had snakes in the sack, so they called him a Snake Man. Well, he did have snakes in the sack. And he would go mostly, like, I lived on Throckmorton after Sunnyside. We talked about the Sunnyside house we moved to, 491 Throckmorton, a Kleist house, and it was a big, great, big old house.
Oh, and, okay. And when did you?
I was seven, so it would have been 19 in the 50s.
Okay, and then you moved to?
Now we moved. We had to go to a house on Hillarita just for a year because my parents sold the house so fast, even she was in real estate, and she couldn't find anything she wanted. And they had to be out, so they bought another house that would do until they found this one. So that's, yeah.
So she was in real estate when you were a young kid.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I thought more afterwards.
And after, well,
did
yeah.
Did she have any fun real estate stories she told
you? Oh, she probably did. I'm sure she did. You know, I can't think right now, okay. But yeah. Well, she used to tell me about this. And she did tell me about the house because she was a young girl growing up here, about a house on Buena Vista that had a body in the basement. But now I don't know which house it was, and I don't know the exact story. But yeah, there were some weird things. I know one weird thing that happened to my neighbor across the street.
Across the street here?
Oh yeah, across on Mesa. He was I can't think of his name though right now. But he was an old-time Mill Valley guy. Somebody dropped by some mushrooms, wild mushrooms, on his porch, and he ate them and died. So there was a lot of weird, you know, people trusted everybody, and in those days you didn't even lock your doors or anything else, but you know, they'd leave you things, and it was a nice town in those days. But anyway, back to the Snake Man. So he would go, we used to hang out, play at Old Mill Park and Cascade Creek, because it was, I lived in Throckmorton, up
right
Throckmorton, past Old Mill School, up that way. And he would gather these snakes. Well, he lived in a house, it looked like a Victorian, it looked like Norman Bates's house, kind of. He lived with his mother, and he was a grown man, but really strange. And the hole in the front of their house, it was
just on Throckmorton?
Yeah, and it was on the right side. I got to go by and see if it's still there. I doubt if it still is. It was probably across from Josephine and then up a little bit more on the right side. They had newspapers. It was a hoarder, evidently, and newspapers in the windows. You couldn't see anything, and it was really scary. And then the fact that he had snakes. Well, he had all kinds of weird snakes and orange snakes and just things that you didn't see. I don't know where he got his snakes. But my cat used to go down and hunt down at his place and bring snakes home and then bring it for a present in the house. And my grandmother had come to visit from Sonoma. She was staying a few days, and she was sweeping, and she swept behind the wastebasket, moved it, and there was this, like, exotic snake that just scared her. So we know he had snakes. and used to raise rats to feed the snakes. And all the kids in the neighborhood would go down. We all wanted pet rats. And he sold them for 15 cents. And my mother goes, don't go in the house. Don't go in his house. So we went with a group of kids and stood on the porch. And he kept bringing, they already had their rat. I didn't have mine. It took me a while to convince my mother to let me have a pet rat. And I said, oh, no, no, that looks like so-and-so's. And then he'd bring another one. No, no. Finally, he brought the right rat, and we bought him. And my father made a cage for him, and that rat lived for years and years until finally we didn't want him anymore. He was huge. He was big, great big, like a rabbit. And we gave it to a friend in Petaluma, and then his mother got tired of it. The cage was smelly. It was terrible. But he was a nice rat. So
Did you ever let him out?
Oh, yeah. He was out, and he'd sit. When he was not too big, he'd sit on my shoulder, and he would run on the back of the couch and stuff. He was definitely a pet. He was very cute. His name was Freddie. And we took him after the kid didn't want it. My mother didn't want that rat back. So we took him. It was where wildlife now was, on the Albert Park before they moved. They used to have like a natural history thing with animals, and they took them. So that was good.
Wow.
Yeah. But I heard, from my mother, I heard about when the town, practically the whole town was on fire. And I guess it was 1929, maybe, around there, when it caught fire on the mountain and came down. How awful for 3 days. They didn't know. And they were packed up and ready to go, and they didn't know how far it was going to come.
Where was your mother at that point?
She was on Sunnyside with my grandparents. That was in 1929 when she was a child. She went to Summit School, Old Mill School, Tamalpais High School, and I went to Park School. I started Park School because we lived on Sunnyside, and then we moved up to Throckmorton. I changed up to Old Mill School, and then Edna McGuire was a new school. I went to Edna McGuire. I used to walk over the hill and down the railroad tracks here to get to school.
Wait, how'd you get here?
Just right over the hill. There were no houses or anything there. We'd go over the hill and down, cross Corn Madera Grade, and then go down a little dip, and there's railroad tracks there, and we'd walk the tracks to the school.
Was that shorter than just going
down the hill? I don't know. It's probably not, but it was fun. We thought it was shorter. It was just more of an adventure. Yeah. I don't know if it was shorter or not. And then Edna McGuire, speaking of Edna McGuire, she was my mother's teacher. Beautiful young woman when she was young. And I didn't know she was a substitute when I went to Old Mill School. And she was, you know, older, much older than, I don't know how long she taught, but for a really long time. Really nice lady. And my grandmother used to have a lot of the ladies over, the teachers, and people over for lunch all the time. They did that, and she always had the teachers and had Edna McGuire over there and everything, so my mother knew her very well, and then they named the school after, but she's a wonderful woman. And I don't know what else. When we lived here, across the street on Mesa was a house that some friends bought. They weren't friends then, they were new people, and they were going to rent it, use it as a rental, and they were very apprehensive about renting this house. It was Francis Ford Coppola rented the house when he was making The Godfather, and he was filming up at Marine Art and Garden Center. It was when he was doing those scenes. So he moved in, and they said, well, we're really kind of afraid to have a tenant. We're really apprehensive. He said, I won't bother you. I promise I won't call you unless there's a fire. So they said, okay. And they rented it. And he didn't have any furniture or anything. He was, you know, this was what, the late 60s. He had like some of the crew people over there. And they sat, they had director's chairs as the furniture. And those days there wasn't all the bushes, and you could just see right in. Our houses are like fishbowls, and we could see his director chairs over there. And one night, my dog, we had a German Shepherd, and she was barking, 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 wouldn't shut up. She's standing at the sink looking out, and their house is on fire. So I called the owners, and I said, your house is on fire.
Who were the owners?
Those owners, it was Marianne and John King. And So they came down, of course, and it was terrible. So he moved in after that. And then they moved into the house once
was it
they
destroyed?
Fixed it up. It was mostly confined to the garage and the kitchen and stuff. It wasn't totally destroyed. We went outside and had hoses to protect our property. And then when the firemen came, my mother was always really nice to everybody, and she made coffee. She set a table off of the carport and made coffee and donuts for the firemen. And it went on, you know, all night. They cleaned up and did stuff. But, yeah, but he didn't call. The fire happened, and he didn't call. So that was funny. But there's been a lot of famous people here in town, of course. And I've seen
like who?
Oh, like Grace Slick and Jerry Garcia. And
where'd Jerry live?
Jerry was up the street here on Alta Vista for a while, right towards the end. And I don't think he lived there, but I think he used to practice music, or he was there a lot. He would just drive by and wave, just up at the top of the hill.
Like these driveways across the street?
No, just around when you go up the hill. He was up
those
that,
houses
over
that-
there up. That
oh, okay.
Way. Yeah, if you go towards Park School and Alta Vista that way. But, and then, let's see, it was Mike Bloomfield Band in the 60s rented the house that my aunt owned, the other one that was the, you know, where she had owned that duplex. She owned a house on Carmelita, and they rented that.
What number in Carmelita?
I don't know what number. It's right across from where... There's another little street there, just a little street. You start up the hill on Carmelita. Mountain View is here, and it's like two houses up. It's a big old house. Big.
Yeah.
It's the first real old one with a porch out in front.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the corner of Carmelita Turpe.
Yeah. But across the street.
Is where she owned.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really nice house. So.
So the band meant the Michael Bloomfield Band rented that house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Quicksilver Messenger Service, of course, the Cipollinos.
When we did our history tour talking about the Sunnyside house that your mom grew up in, the owner said that John Cipollino used to live there.
In that house? He did, huh? He came in.
That probably would have been after your time.
Yeah, oh yeah, because, well, I was, you know, I was just, I knew his sister was a friend of my girlfriend's sister across the street, so she was a few years older.
Which sister?
What was her name? She died, didn't she? Mikey, Michelle?
The one who was married to John Gardner.
Yes, yeah, she was her friend in high school, my friend's, Claudia's friend in high school. And so it was after that, and it was when my mom was real active in real estate, and it was in the 60s when I was interested in the Avalon Ballroom and Fillmore. I love that band, but he came in, even though his dad was in real estate, it was odd. He went to Kegwin and Hamilton. They were looking for a house. And it's very odd that they pulled in there. My mother said she came home and she had a card from the band, and she said, "Have you ever heard of them?" And she told me the story about Quicksilver, that they were Virgos, and Mercury was the rising sign or something, and Mercury is Quicksilver. So that's how they got the name of the band, Quicksilver. Oh, but later on, like, you know, in the 90s, my husband and I opened a surf shop in Petaluma, and we had the brand Quicksilver because I loved Quicksilver Messenger Service so much. And they had sued, and I guess the band sued them for taking their name. They were a surf company around that same time of the band. And someone must have liked Quicksilver. So they named this brand, this surf brand, Quicksilver. And they had to change it and spell it not with a, they took the C out, and it was Quick, Q-U-I-K, Quicksilver.
The surf company is Quicksilver. Uh-huh. Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. But it had something to do with that band.
Okay, getting back to what you said. So I think what you said, John Cipollino, when he was looking for a house, went to Cagwin, seeing him in Hamilton.
Yeah, which didn't make sense at all, with his dad was in Gino. You know, he was famous in town in real estate.
Did he buy a house from Cagwin, seeing
him? I don't think he bought it. I think they were just renting. It was the whole band. And in those days, Janis Joplin went there to look for something. All the, you know, this was the happening place. So a lot of those people came in, and they were just a prominent office there. And yeah. That's interesting, huh? What else? That's about it, the snake man. I know. Okay. When my mother was a child growing up on Sunnyside, they didn't have refrigerators. They had ice boxes, and the ice box, the ice man would come every day and bring ice. They'd get blocks of ice. Then there was a company in Sausalito. There may have been another one, but I know there was an ice company in Sausalito that made ice and delivered it. And so they couldn't refrigerate very long. So every day they went to the butcher to get what they were going to have for dinner. They didn't keep things around. And that was her job. She liked to walk around and do everything. That she didn't drive at that time. It was before she drove, and she would walk. And she said even when they would walk to the high school and come home, her friend, she had a friend that just died a couple years ago. Her name was Josephine Mackey. They lived on Millwood. And she had a sister, Enid, and her mother came right over from Italy. And they became, when my grandmother came, they were, you know, like kitty corner of the streets, and everybody knew everybody. They became friends. And those two, my mother and Josie, were friends from the time they were 2 years old until my mother died, and we stayed friends, and I helped her with her estate. And, you know, it was just, she was a wonderful person. But they used to go to school together. They went to Summit. They went to all the different schools together. And when they'd walk to school and then they'd come home for lunch, people could go home. They had enough time and they'd walk home for lunch. And then they'd always have to stop and get bologna or whatever, you know, cheese at the butcher shop too.
And where was the butcher shop?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking it was somewhere around the Sequoia Theater, somewhere down right, you know, in the heart of things. But I remember Sui Kee Market, the Chinese market that came in. I don't know when it started, but when I was little, we used to go there a lot. But
and that was?
That was right by the Sequoia Theater, where Sunapa Farms was for a while.
Oh, is that where it was?
Yeah, yeah. That was a really neat store, and they had a lot of Chinese dishes and all kinds of cool stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm just sorry the town doesn't have right now. It's like I don't even go downtown. There's nothing here for me. And when I grew up, the whole town had, you know, we had the drugstores and stationery store and anything you needed downtown. Everybody went downtown. The first fall festival was at Lytton Square. And I remember that. That was a big deal when they had that. We went down. In high school, I worked at Mayer's department store. They had a store on the corner, and then they had one farther down on the other side of
corner of Miller and Throckmorton, right?
That was a lady store, and I worked in the men's store, which is down, is it D'Angelo's restaurant that's there now? That's where it was. And then
and that was the men's store?
Mm-hmm. I did gift wrapping there, so I worked on holiday. So if it was Mother's Day, then I worked up at the other store. Otherwise, I worked in the men's store for Christmas and Valentine's. Our friend, well, the one that he was married to, he was a Barney, we're from Barney's Hardware. The Barneys have been here forever. And he married one of the Mackey girls, Enid, and he managed the store. And so we were good friends, and he hired me in high school. And
so he was older. He was a generation older than you.
He was younger than my mother. He lived across the street. The Varneys lived across the street when we lived on Mountain View. They lived across the street from us, John Varney and Jean Varney and the kids. And he was the youngest kid.
And who owned the, who started the hardware store?
Oh, I think the grandfather did.
Was that John Varney?
Johnny was his dad, yeah. It may have been him. It was an uncle, and it was John Varney. And that, I miss that store. That was a wonderful store. They had everything you could want. I remember getting roller skates there and getting Christmas ornaments. Anything you needed, they had, and paint, and, you know, it was just wonderful. So, yeah. I don't know what else.
So what are your highlights of going to TAM?
Oh, I was on the drill team, and I enjoyed that. I loved TAM. It was fun. I liked high school. Oh, I know one more thing. We had a PE teacher named Mrs. Baker, but she was married to Mr. Baker, who was a postman. And when I was living on Throckmorton, and probably around 7, 8 years old, they didn't have a leash law in those days. Everybody's dog was just out. And usually dogs don't like mailmen, but he was like the Pied Piper. And he would walk from the post office on Sunnyside, do the mail all the way up Throckmorton, which we were pretty far up Throckmorton. That was a long walk to carry a mail sack with all his mail. They didn't drive around then. And he would start out, they lived down, I think, La Goma or somewhere right around Sycamore, down that way. And he'd start out at the post office and all the dogs would follow him and they'd join in. And by the time he got up to Throckmorton, there were like 12 or 15 dogs with him and they were all well behaved. And that was their daily walk. They went with him all day long. Everybody loved Mr. Baker. He was a wonderful, wonderful mailman, but always had an entourage of dogs around him. And the dogs liked him. They never barked and carried on. He was so nice. So anyway, but Tam was fun. Then I went to medical secretary school in San Francisco and worked at UC for 12 years. And then we lived in Petaluma. I was commuting, and I was going to have my second child, and so I decided I'd find something closer, and I started working up there as a medical assistant for years, for probably 15 years. And then we opened the surf shop. My husband used to work for the cable cars. He was a machinist for the cable cars in San Francisco, and he was injured on the job, and so we opened the shop to have a business, and it was like a second, for both of us, second occupation for both of us, career. And we had that for 16 years. And then my mom passed away, and I didn't want to commute from here. I didn't know which house to sell, what to do. And I loved it here, so we came back here. But my husband lived here for a while, too. He's from San Francisco, and he lived down on Mesa. He rented a house there. He lived on the houseboats in Sausalito during the 60s. And it was a good time then. The town was really fun. It was a good place to be. Okay.
Hey, so now what were you saying about Jerry Garcia used to be on the street?
Yes, he would go by and he would wave, and he was a very nice guy, and he was up the street. I don't think he lived there. I think he either practiced his music or he had a friend there or maybe even did drugs there, but he was there quite a bit.
Where's there?
It was 55 Alta Vista. It's a pink house at the top of the hill. And he would frequent Safeway. You'd see him around town a lot. And it was definitely Jerry. So my mother was curious, and I was all into the 60s and posters. And she always assumed it was Jerry. Well, then she got to talking to this woman that we called Mountain Girl because we don't know her name. And we thought maybe it was Mountain Girl, Jerry's first wife. But I think she was in the music business, either some kind of promotions or something, that woman that lives up the street, but we don't know her. And she said, my mother said something about Jerry Garcia, and she said, no. She said, my husband is a Jerry Garcia lookalike. And they met each other in either Mexico or Hawaii. They were scuba diving, and she has pictures of Jerry Garcia and pictures of her husband. And she, you know, talked all about these pictures she has of Jerry Garcia. So we wanted to see the pictures. We were very curious, but never got that far. Well, one day, this house became a mystery to us, and it was like a mission. We had to find out what was going on. We were just curious. And one day, my mother was driving by, and she was not afraid to talk to anybody.
And this is about what year?
Whenever Bill Graham died. It was after they had a memorial concert for him. And she had gotten me a poster because I collect 60s posters. So it was probably, the 80s maybe? I don't know, maybe 80s, early 90s. I would say 80s. I don't know. But she stopped by the house. Someone was out.
She is your mom.
My mother. She stopped by. She saw people working in the garden, which was unusual anyway because that garden needed work. No one, you never saw anyone around that house. It was just, you'd go by and other neighbors were out. No one, you know, they kept to themselves there. But it was the same car that was parked there. It was the same car that he would drive by and Jerry and wave.
What kind of car was it?
I think it was a Mercedes or a BMW. It was a black car. And fancy, nice car. Fancy for the house that, you know, just, it didn't quite fit. So anyway, these guys were out working in the garden, and she stopped and she said, does Jerry Garcia have anything to do with this house? And this fellow came over and he said, well, can I help you? And, well, he said that first, and then she said, and she said, I'm looking for an autograph for my daughter of a poster. And he said, well, I'll give you an autograph. Just get some water.
Sorry. So she said, well, if I just wanted anybody's autograph, I'd get Grace Slick's autograph. She lives up on the hill. And he laughed, and he was really cute, and he said, okay. And she said goodbye. So she told me that was odd that this guy didn't say, no, Jerry doesn't have anything to do with this house. He said, what makes you ask? So the next day in the IJ was an article with Bob Weir's picture in it, and that was the fellow that was at the house doing the yard work or out in the garden that talked to her that would have given her an autograph. So I said, if you ever see Bob Weir again, get his autograph. I didn't care whose I had on there. But anyway, so we figured that Jerry did have something to do with that house. Well, it went on for a few years, and then Jerry died, and the woman had told us that her husband was a lookalike for Jerry Garcia, but the strangest thing is, her husband died when Jerry died, and the car was gone. We never saw the car again, and we don't know.
She didn't tell your husband died. He just never showed up again. There was never...
He did die. She did say he died.
Oh.
Yes, because my mother said something about her husband, said, I haven't seen your husband around, and she said he died. And I said, well, that's kind of a coincidence, isn't it?
You said to your mother?
Yeah.
To your mother.
Yeah, to my mother. Yeah, we really thought something was going on. So when I opened, we had the surf shop in Petaluma, and I really loved Grateful Dead, and we used to carry... We were called the Grateful Dead Quarters, and we carried all their stuff, and I still, you know, was really interested in Grateful Dead and the bands of the 60s that were here in Mill Valley. So, yeah, that was a big loss. I went to school with Bill Champlin. He came here, I think, when I was in about eighth grade. My girlfriend, my best friend, Susie Muller, who grew up on Carmelita.
Hi.
She was his girlfriend in like seventh grade, maybe it was sixth grade, seventh grade. They were very, very musical. He was a really nice guy. And then he went on to form the Sons of Champlin. And that's our connection with him. I went to school with a Steve Miller that was in a band, and I'm pretty sure it's the same Steve Miller, but maybe not. You never know. It looks just like him. My other girlfriend, Sue Gibson, her brother, Bill, is the drummer for Huey Lewis. So I have stories about Bill, but I wouldn't want to divulge anything, but I've known him since he was a child.
And Mike Bloomfield lives around the corner from us.
Yeah, I already said that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, one more thing that I wasn't going to mention because people would probably think I'm crazy. But when I was about in my 20s, maybe 22 or so, I lived here, and this was the house.
Wait, lived here? What?
Yeah. Oh, the Alta Vista
house. Here.
This Alta Vista house that I still live in. This was the Folger house, and the Manson Tate murders. Abigail Folger, one of the coffee heiresses, was murdered. And I was in my room. This is after the murders, and I was in my room, and I saw a person walk right here through the hall. And I thought it was my mother in a nightgown going to the bathroom, but the light never came on. I said, what are you doing? Because it went right into, my door was open, went right in into the wall, like, and no noise, no lights, no nothing. I said, what are you doing? And I got up and I looked, and there was no one there. And I went to her room, and she was in bed. So I always thought that was the ghost of Abigail coming back to this house. And I don't know if she ever had anything to do with living in this house or if that was her aunt. I just don't know who Ann Folger was related to Abigail, but we always called that ghost Abigail. But people think you're nuts if you talk about the weird things in the house. So that's it.